shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra. Daytime turns me off and I don't
need maybe. Welcome to Nocturnal Journal, our Boxing Day edition here on 720 WGN. We got a whole bunch of boxing-related guests. You know, Boxing Day, Dan Long, is technically when the servicemen, the tradesmen, and the working class receive gifts in boxes from their bosses.
Yeah, I actually learned that on the air yesterday.
Yeah, so instead of that, we're doing this. So we've got a whole bunch of great guests, and we're gonna start it off with Pete Hoffman, co-director of the Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame,
yes,
which I want to get to in a minute. My old friends, Bob Mutter, former Tribune Sun-Times boxing writer.
Hey, Dave.
Jeff Johnson, Bulls fan, former Sun-Times boxing writer. And a woman I saw fight, Rita Figueroa, a member of the Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame.
Hello.
Nice to see you. Thank you all for coming down on Boxing Day. I'm a pedestrian fan of boxing. I haven't been to a fight in a while. So I just want to start off with a little State of the Union. What's going on with boxing now? Where are we at?
Well, I can start, Dave. I think boxing generally is in good shape. I mean, there are a lot of organizations and therefore a lot of champions. And so, as we were talking about before the show, there is sometimes some confusion or some lack of clarity, if you will, about who's the champion or what they're fighting for.
That's me. I don't know what's going on.
However, yeah, right. And you're not alone. That said, the best fights are still having enormous buy rates for pay-per-view. I mean, you know, Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather was one of the, you know, might not have been the best fight of all time, but it was certainly one of the biggest, if not the biggest pay-per-view of all time. And so, you know, and Klitschko versus Fury was on network TV because of the time difference, it was on in the afternoon, did very well. Premier Boxing is on Spike. So there's a lot of great action happening. And I think that perhaps the championships have become less important than the best fighters being involved in good fights. And there's a lot of that.
That's absolutely true. And also, I think boxing might be suffering, shrinking a little bit in the United States, but I think it's growing globally quite a bit.
Give me an example of that.
Well, you have fighters. It used to be almost every champion was an American. Mm-hmm. You've got fighters now from Asia, South America, Mexico, Eastern Europe, Northern Europe, behind the old Iron Curtain, all over the place. And they're the top fighters. It's not just like one time and out.
Rita, what's it like locally?
You know, there's still a lot of good fighters, lot of good fighters, a lot of people training hard. And, you know, I think, as it was mentioned earlier, boxing being on free TV that people can see it, I think that's a very good thing. You know, when you get to pay-per-views that are $59, $79, whatever dollars, for the Mayweather fight was $100, it's a lot of money for people. So to put it on free TV, I think is great. It's going to keep drawing more people in.
What's it like, all you guys, what's it like locally here? What's the scene like locally? I mean, I saw you fight in Cicero. We were just talking before we went on the air. What about local fights? Is there stuff like that?
Hopefully they get some more fights locally. I know there's a lot of fights in Hammond. You know, Bobby Hitz mm-hmm. does a show in Hammond all the time. There aren't as many in the city of Chicago as there used to be, so hopefully that can come back a little bit better next year. And, you know, with eight counts now Warrior, you know, they don't have the same amount of shows here as they used to, so... Hopefully that picks up back in the city. But there's shows all the time out in at the venue in Hammond. So there'll be a lot of good fights out there.
At the Cicero Stadium as well.
Stadium.
They still do Cicero Stadium.
Yeah, not as often, but they have them there. There's a couple of minor and my apologies for calling them minor, but newer or smaller promoters mm-hmm. that are also playing the Hammond Civic Center, Hammond Armory. I mean, there's quite a bit of action going on in Metro Chicago.
I mean, we had the PBC fights
UIC.
That was a good show. I mean, and there were some great fights.
And when 8 Count was still here before they merged with Warrior, they had three or four ESPN Friday night fights mm-hmm. in the course of about 18 months. So a lot of great fights.
Mm-hmm. You fought with 8 Count, was that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tell the listeners what 8 Count was.
8 Count was Dominic Pasoli. It was a promotion. You know, when I was fighting, things are different now. You kind of pretty much have to sign a contract with somebody to get to fights. But, you know, all my fights were with 8 Count. And, you know, he's with Warriors now, so I think they're out on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. So he's not around here anymore. The bigger promoter here now is Bobby Hitz, and he's got a lot of the guys and girls fighting on his shows. So It's not as easy as it used to be anymore because you're limited on the shows that you have here.
You, Rita, you were a four-time Chicago Golden Glove champion?
Yes, sir.
When was that? And
2000 to 2004.
Okay, what's the Golden Glove scene like now?
It's good. There's a lot of fights where I'm involved with it quite a bit as far as all the registration and stuff. So, what I like personally is you see a lot more women signing up now, and I think that's a great thing. I think women are. There's a lot of good fighters out there that work their butts off, because as a woman fighter, I know you have to kind of, you feel like you have to prove yourself a little bit more because it's a man sport. We know that. That's just how it goes. But there's a lot of women out there that are busting their butts all the time, working hard, and they're showing it, too. So a lot of the good fights were the women's fights.
What years did you fight?
At the gloves?
Yeah.
2000, 2004.
And how many women fighters were there then?
A handful at best.
And how many?
And now we have, when I look at the spreadsheets and see what there's 40, 50 sign up. So, and that's a huge number. It doesn't sound like it, but that's a huge number of amateur women fighters in the city and the surrounding area.
Does something like Ronda Rousey, does something like that inspire other women to fight? Or is that a whole different thing?
You know, I'm sure it does. I'm sure seeing any woman that gets the spotlight for a combat sport, I think that helps for sure. As a martial artist myself, I'm not a big fan of Ronda Rousey, because our thing is to show respect, and she lacks that a little bit, so... but if it helps women get out there and work on the sport, then that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. Pete, tell us about the Illinois. I didn't even know until a couple of weeks ago there was an Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame. So tell us about that and what the future of that is.
Well, you can make the argument, Dave, that before a few weeks ago there wasn't one. which kind of came as a shock. I actually, my partner in this, the actual director of the Hall of Fame, is a fellow named Mike McNamara, who I've known for probably 35 years, and we were training partners, and he was a ranked kickboxer, tournament fighter, a trainer. He trained a world cruiserweight kickboxing champion as well. And there was an organization started, well, it'll be 12 years ago this coming year, called the Illinois Martial Arts Hall of Fame. And Mike was in the second class that was inducted, that was entered. He took it over in the third year, and it's grown beautifully. About 3 years ago, and I became co-director about 5 years ago with Mike on the Martial Arts Hall. And about 3 years ago, we began to induct, because we were inducting people from a lot of different martial arts who had fantastic resumes, but we began to induct boxers or people connected with boxing as well. And they were very excited, very appreciative. And then they said to us, by the way, guys, this is wonderful. Do you know there isn't an Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame? And we were floored. I mean, there's, a very rich 150-year history of, and important fights and transcendent fighters and great venues. I mean, boxing is very much synonymous with Chicago sports history. So then the same people came to us and said, you guys clearly know how to run a Hall of Fame. Would you be interested in doing one? And we said, yeah. And we found out very quickly that there was a gigantic pent-up demand for it. We actually had the event November 14th at the Abington in Glen Ellen, and we sold it out. We had 400 people there. We could have easily sold 600 people, 600 seats if we'd had the space. And we had to change venues twice to get one that big. So it clearly was something that that there was a great demand for.
Is this when some of the inductees came in?
That's when they all came in.
Like Rita? Rita came
yes,
in?
Yes, yes.
Some of these people, we know very well. I know Montel Griffin. Mm-hmm. We always talk about Montel Griffin. And,
yeah, no, it was. We had five Olympians. We had...
David Diaz?
Yeah, David Diaz, world champion, several world champions. excuse me, Danielle Nicholson. I mean, I'm inevitably with 32 inductees going to forget people. We had people.
Tony Zale, Jeff. Yeah. Jeff, you saw Tony Zale fight.
Talk Tony Zale.
Yeah. Just a couple. I was a little young for that. But anyway, So we did. It was pretty funny as we began this because both Mike and I come from martial arts backgrounds. There was a little bit of who are these guys, and fortunately we had five great people in already who said these are guys that are willing to do something that nobody stepped up to do so far. And from that point on, we got an enormous amount of cooperation. But then they said, those same people were like, well, make sure to get it right. And actually, the tone was a bit more threatening than that. Make sure I could, maybe if I, but that was the message, and we listened. And so we started with an enormous list, as you can imagine, with 150 years of history. we had a gigantic introductory class. We inducted 32 people, including the five that had been previously inducted into the Martial Arts Hall. Six or seven were posthumous. And then there were, you know, some people that couldn't attend. They were older and, you know, health reasons and stuff. But, yeah, it went great.
My key question is there going to be a physical location, a place people can go see plaques and learn about all
perhaps. You know, we live in a virtual world.
Yeah.
So, we have a Facebook page. If you do a search on Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame or the Martial Arts Hall of Fame, for that matter, on Facebook, you can find us very easily in that regard. There's a list. This all came together very quickly. So the next step will be a website. And, in fact, I was at a board of directors meeting for the hall this afternoon, and we, in fact, were talking about how do we handle a physical location. Would it be something that we could move or, you know, traveling or something like that? So, no physical location yet. But as we grow, I think that's something that we're definitely looking at and would like to do.
All right, we're going to take a break for some spots, and I want to come back and talk a little about boxing history when we get back here on WGN.
Back up, sucker. Back up. Come get me, sucker. I'm dancing. I'm dancing. Follow me, son. No, I'm not there. I'm here. Whoop. You out, sucker.
Welcome back to our Boxing Day edition of Nocturnal Journal here on 720 WGN. We've got our panelists here. I want to tell our boxing writers, Bob Mutter and Jeff Johnson, what's the current state of boxing on a national level? Who should we look for? What's going on? I don't even know when the next big fight would be.
You know, I don't think there's anything huge coming up. The next one that I'm really talking about might be a year off. Would be Gennady Golovkin and Saul Alvarez, which would be a great fight.
Why is that?
They're just two tremendous punchers. They're both gifted boxers. They're in the prime of their career, and they're roughly the same weight. And they're just on a collision course. They're coming off great fights, and it should be great. But we have to wait a little while. They have to each get by one more opponent before that.
Or Bob, you might take Gennady Golovkin and match him up with Andre Ward, too, and I think you'd have a super fight.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Or Sergey Kovalev and Adonis Stevenson, but that's another one that's quite a ways off.
I wouldn't give Stevenson much of a shot but...
Well, I wouldn't either, but puncher's chance.
Yeah. Now, who are they talking about? Again, I mean, who are these people?
Actually, none of them are American, are they?
Yeah, really?
No, to your point earlier, and also they, in almost every case, I think, in fact, in every case, they hold some version of the championship in their weight class.
In their weight class.
So you have, I don't think at the end of any of those fights, maybe the Golovkin fight, you would have an undisputed champ in that weight division. But for the most part, you're talking about getting at least two of the versions of world championships that are out there in one person.
What about Chicago as a boxing mecca? You know, this afternoon I was reading A.J. Liebling, The Sweet Science, and stuff.
Great.
He talks in the 1930s, 40s, you know, flying to Chicago to see fights at the Chicago Stadium and stuff. And I've gone to a couple fights with you guys. I mean, what are your boxing memories here of good fights you saw in the city? You guys.
I've seen some fantastic fights over the years, and thankfully from ringside. But the heyday was really before my time. I started covering it in about 88. But in that time, I've seen like Tony La Rosa and Lenny LaPaglia and Collins Landini and Alfonso Ratliff against Craig Bojanowski and Rita. Rita always brought them out of their seats. And
which one was that?
Rita Figueroa?
Yeah. I mean, which fight?
I don't remember every one. She drove them nuts.
Yeah, right, yeah.
She was perhaps the most popular fighter in Chicago.
Right, yeah.
Jeff, I think the two Ratliff-Bojanowski fights were really compelling. They were both close majority decisions that Alfonso Ratliff won. And Craig Bojanowski came from the Tinley Park, Orland Park area, which is not necessarily a haven for boxing, but he fought with a prosthesis on his leg after a motorcycle accident. He had an artificial foot, basically, so... The fact that he was able to stand in there with a world champion and fight two great fights with him was really remarkable.
Yeah. When was that?
That was the late 80s.
That was the late 80s?
Yeah.
Pete?
We had Craig's son at the Hall of Fame this year, and it was a very touching moment. I had met Gator a couple of times myself, and he was an interesting guy. And he was a 12-0 pro and really somebody who was on the rise when he lost – you know, all of his right leg below the knee, and he worked in his autobiography is a fun read. It was written, obviously, before he passed away recently. But he worked with six or seven different prostheses, medical device companies, to get a prosthesis that would work and allow him to continue to box at a high level, but then get in fights. I mean, you know, because there was no upside for anybody that that he wanted to fight. It was like, you know, you lose and you lost to the guy with one leg, and you beat a guy, you know, beat him, and you beat a guy with one leg. But he was 12-0 before the motorcycle accident, and finished I think 31 or 36-4. So he did eventually get there and fought for the championship twice, and held a United States belt as well.
Why don't we see any more big fights in Chicago? What happened?
Well, that's a good question. It's kind of cyclical. I mean, it comes and it goes.
Don King did some stuff here for a while, didn't he?
Bob Arum, too.
Yeah, right.
But never regularly. Mm-hmm. And I think Bob Arum kind of left town because the media coverage wasn't that good. And he was disgusted. You know, he brought Mike Weaver and Quick Tillis here to the Old Horizon, mm-hmm. Nally Allstate Arena. The undercard featured Marvin Hagler and Mustafa Hamshaw. And he's dead. Pretty good selling tickets, but he hardly got any newspaper coverage or TV coverage, and he just didn't want to come back to Chicago.
And that is still the same today. Yeah. That is still the same. There's nothing out there. There's really not a lot of publicity about it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Chicago can ever compete with the big casino towns in terms of top echelon fights.
That's true.
Because that boxing's almost the loss leader on those weekends. They want to get real high rollers out to the casinos as soon as the fight's over. So unless we get some changes in the gaming laws here, I don't think that'll ever happen. But Chicago could be a very solid secondary market, and it should be. There's plenty of interest for it.
There is.
Well, and as you guys also mentioned earlier, it's very much more of an international sport than it was during the heyday. Yeah. So you're competing with Macau, obviously with Vegas domestically, but then, you know, Klitschko and Arthur Abraham for a couple, you know, are out of Germany. I mean, so there are big fights around the world, not
Canada
just in the United
too,
States.
Right across the border in Canada. There's huge fights in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rita, I saw you fight in Cicero. Did you fight in other cities?
I fought, I fought in Indiana and here. I was pretty local.
You were pretty local.
Local.
I was just wondering if there was, like, different audiences, different crowds.
You know, what's huge for women, too, is overseas.
Yeah.
Overseas, you know, that, and they make more money. Unfortunately, it's if you want to make money, not that I encourage people to just go for the money, but, you know, it happens. People do it. But overseas, they pay a lot better than they do here.
They do.
So
what was your path into the sport? And I know we were talking, you started a little later
in life. I started quite late. I went to a Degra Academy martial arts first. I always liked boxing anyway. Started with kickboxing. Was good at kickboxing, but I would just kick you really quick, light up the lamp, and then I would just punch you, you know, because you had to get your kicks, and that way you lost some points. So Oscar Bravo, who was the instructor at Daggerberg, actually was one of Sam's fighters at Windy City.
Okay.
So he said, come on, let's go over there, and that was it. That was it for me.
What was your first match? What was your first fight like?
Amateur or pro?
Pro.
I fought a girl at Hawthorne Racetrack.
Okay.
And it was an ESPN show, and I remember Donovan George is on that card. And they said, okay, you might be a swing bout. Well, you know how that goes. You put your gloves on, and then you wait. So for my first pro fight, I didn't fight until like 11 p.m., and I was just nervous as you wouldn't believe. So it was like, really? Are we going to fight? No, we're not. So by the time I got to the ring, I was exhausted from being so nervous, you know. But it worked out well. I won the fight, and that's... Here we are.
You were lightweight and junior welterweight? Mm-hmm. You fought under those classes? Mm-hmm. I remember, I didn't take notes. I was just there drinking beers and having a good time. But did you have quick hands? I mean, what was your style?
No. You know, my style was just, if you hit me once, I'm going to hit you twice.
Yeah.
You know, I'm much more technical now as a trainer. As a fighter, it was just like, all right, it's go time. Let's go.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take
aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were a fan favorite.
Because, you know, I didn't mind taking a punch, but if you hit me, I was hitting you back a couple times.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break for the news. Don't go away. We're going to bring Tony Fitzpatrick into this here on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Pistol shots ring out in a barroom night. Enter Betty Valentine from the upper hall. She sees a bartender in a pool of blood. Cries out, my God, they've killed them all. Here comes the story of Eric Kane, the man the authorities came to blame.
Welcome back to our Boxing Day edition of Nocturnal Journal. We're here with Pete Hoffman, co-director of the Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame, boxing writers Bob Mutter and Jeff Johnson. Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame inductee Rita Figueroa. Someone should write a song about you. We got to get Bob on the case, right? And my good friend just joined us, Tony Fitzpatrick, a former boxer. How you doing, Tony?
Who will not be in the Boxing Hall of Fame.
So I've known you. I was telling them before you showed up. I mean, I've known you for a long time, but I don't know much about your boxing career. So tell us about
it,
Tony.
There's not a lot to know. As a kid, not long after high school, I started hanging around, ostensibly to make drawings of all the fighters around Windy City. And at the time, I mean, they had kind of a legendary trainer, a guy named Clarence Griffin, who, you know, was Montel Griffin's father.
Right.
And I went and kind of absorbed that whole milieu, and one day just started, just crawled into the ring and tried my hand at it. You know, I had this kind of romantic idea.
And what? How much did you weigh?
This is 120 pounds.
Really? Oh, yeah.
You know, about 185 pounds. You know, so 180.
Where'd you fight? Did you fight? Where'd you fight?
I had some club fights here and stuff like that. You know, nowhere where there was like a huge pro circuit. You know, I mean, very oftentimes a card, you'll need to fill out a card.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes they'll grab a busboy from the kitchen and put slap trunks on him. That was a big Bobby Hitz trick, you know. often just like that. And, you know, luckily it's not a sport that lets you be deluded about your abilities for very long.
Yeah,
it's Darwinian in the first order, but it also gave me a look at just how much of a sport it is not. I mean, boxing is a lot of stuff, but I don't know that it's sport. I don't know that it's competition. It's the most raw and basic and elemental kind of competition. I don't know that it is necessarily sport.
Well, these guys can respond to that, but I mean, I was reading Liebling today, and the thing they say is you're alone. It's like writing.
Exactly,
you're completely alone.
That's the best thing about it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't have a whole bunch of teammates to fall back on. There isn't that. It's kind of like being a runner. You know, you're by yourself.
Well, Randy Tex Cobb said, you play baseball, you play tennis,
you don't play boxing.
No, and nobody does. And people who do don't play it for long.
Nope.
You know?
That's true.
Can you react to the thing about it being a sport, or is it not being a sport? Can you react to that comment?
I think Tony's point, it's so elemental, and like track and field and other sports that don't require a lot of equipment. There's not a ton of rules. I mean, you know, there are obviously rules, but they're there for a very specific purpose. But when you get down to it, it's just a very basic thing that we all seem to have in us. But as you said, we find out how much we've got in it very quickly.
Well, one of the things I learned, and the reason I did not succeed, is I never, ever had to fight for my next meal. And the guys who succeed at this, the guys who become champions, that's a component of it.
Well,
you know, boxing is always drawn from, you know, working class and poor people.
You show up at a gym and the trainers will kind of try to kick you out of the gym.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want somebody who's not dedicated. Yeah. You got to prove that you
walk
really
in the gym
as
a woman.
And you'll
yeah.
be back.
Yeah, Rhea, back up and tell me, what was that like?
You know, I was very lucky because a lot of people, the first time they see you kind of work out and know that you're going to bust your But I don't know what you can say here. Now,
that's fine.
Yeah. People that you can that know you're going to work hard, they show you the respect. But when you first walk in, it's very intimidating as a woman having all these guys looking at you like, what the hell are they doing there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was lucky because I had a lot of people, a lot of support. So I understand the whole alone thing. As a fighter, I see that. As a trainer on the other side of the ropes, without people helping you get where you want to go, you do have a team. Once you're in the ring, obviously you're by yourself because there's nobody else jumping in there. As a trainer, sometimes I want to jump in and beat the opponent's butt because our guy ain't doing it, you know. But but it's a very lonely sport at times when you're not doing well, but you got a lot of friends around you when you're doing good.
Yeah, I mean, you also notice that any new face in a gym is immediately suspect, you know. I mean, gyms are kind of tight little families.
Oh, yeah.
At least, you know. Mm-hmm. The way Griff ran Windy City was, you know, I mean, it was everybody knew each other, you know, so anybody who came in from the outside or from another gym, you know, there was time
for a beatdown or something.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Yeah, there was that immediate suspect jaundiced eye cast upon them.
Rita, can you talk about that hunger that Tony was talking about? Did you have that, like fighting for your next meal?
You know, that I honestly know. I was already well established as far as having a good job and everything, so I just really liked the sport. I liked how it tested me and how it pushed me to push myself more than I think I ever could. But you do see a lot of the people in there that are fighting for their next. You see it absolutely, and they are, you know, fighting to make themselves better. I got guys now I'm training that, you know, one kid's from a really terrible part of town, and he's fighting to save his life. I mean, he's literally saying, it's either the streets or the gym. So he's really fighting for his life.
Fighting for his life.
Absolutely.
I remember at Windy City, they had a young man who was deaf. Kid's name was David Duke.
Yeah.
They called him Silent Bomber. And this was kind of it for him. You know, this was his way out of, you know, a real handicap. And they brought him along. He had some fights. He had some really good fights. He was a tough guy. And, you know, if you get a chance, read the collection of the late Mark Cram's collection of columns, Great Men Die Twice. Mm-hmm. He used to write for Sports Illustrated. He was the guy who wrote the definitive Ali pieces, Fraser pieces, including one that is one of the most heartbreaking things you'll ever read about Gypsy Joe Harris. Was a guy who was primed to become champ, and then they realized he couldn't see out of one eye. Well, he'd been blind in that eye most of his career, and they revoked his license, and he just faded away from there. Mm. I mean, you do see that it's a sport that we were talking off the air about Roy Jones, mm-hmm. who was probably one of the most towering figures of the 90s and early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And we were mentioning that perhaps it's time for him to give it up. I mean, he's got somewhere to go beyond boxing. He's a great color guy. He's very likable. I think he's got all his money still. Whereas you see guys who, after boxing, you know, sadly, Leon Spinks, who kind of flailed, who was here for a time working
the doorman,
stuff like that. It's a sport that does not promise the cheeriest afterlife, you know.
Rita, you retired in November 2009.
Yes.
How did you know it was time?
I didn't have a choice. I had an injury.
Yeah, so that was it.
Yeah, that was. And honestly, before that fight, I knew that was going to be my last fight. I didn't really say anything because, you know, once you verbalize it, then you're already done.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I knew just in sparring before that punches I used to kind of get out of the way of, I wasn't getting out of the way anymore. So, and I wasn't young either. Again, I started this very late.
At least you could get out of the way of them.
Yeah, at one point I could get out of the way. At one point, yeah.
I had a part-time fireman and me. You know?
I didn't have a choice. That was my injury retired me.
So what from the sport do you bring into your role as a trainer? And you have men and women that you train?
Absolutely.
And what's that like, training,
you know,
both?
It doesn't matter. I'm just a coach.
Yeah.
I'm just a coach. So
what do
it doesn't
you tell
matter
them?
Who the fighter is. It depends who you're working with. It's different for everybody. And, you know, different people learn different ways. So one guy might have to, like, cuss at the other person. It just depends, you know. And the biggest thing is just you have to care about these guys and these girls, you know, because it is a brutal sport, you know. And sometimes they're having a really good day, and sometimes they're having a really bad day.
And now there's always a temptation for a lot of fighters to go the MMA or UFC route, which for me is not – it's not like boxing.
Well, yeah.
Apples and oranges.
Yeah.
Apples and oranges.
I mean, it's more like street fighting. I don't think it's nearly as disciplined.
As a martial artist, I would almost disagree with that.
No, I mean not so much the MMA, but the very beginnings of the cage fights and
that's where I get thrown like off.
It seemed like the kind of guys who'd get thrown out of bars on Friday night.
It's much more disciplined now.
And to your point, it's a very high level professional sport now with a worldwide audience, and the participants reflect that as well. There's a very high level of professionalism.
Do you watch those fights?
Oh, of course.
Do you follow them?
Yeah.
I've just never kind of been able to get into them. I've watched, you know, Chuck Liddell and a few, and Ronda Rousey, who would be a brilliant fighter in any discipline, you know.
Firstly, I disagree. I'm not a big Ronda Rousey fan, and you could tell by her last fight that she obviously did not work in boxing. She fought a world-class, multi-champion female boxer, and look what happened.
She thought
that her reputation as just a badass can go out there and take her down, and didn't work out very well for her.
How long did she last that night?
What was it, 13 seconds? No, second round. My bad. That was the second round. That was a different fight. But yeah, second round, when you're training for a fight, you're supposed to train to
for
beat
who you're
this
fighting.
Person, and you could tell she changed
I'm
nothing.
I'm a victim of her highlight reel, then, because I have watched her kick some serious ass.
Oh, yeah. She always gets him in the armbar, and she takes him down. But if you notice, her hand skills are terrible. Now, could they be good? Absolutely. Yeah. If she lets go of her ego a little bit and says, okay, you know what, maybe I should work on this because I can't beat everybody.
Do you guys ever notice when fighters first start making money that perhaps sometimes it takes a little bit off their gym game?
You know, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Although you don't notice that with Floyd.
No.
I don't much money? Like Floyd, but I got to tell you, he's got impeccable skills.
Absolutely.
He really does. He's one of the most scientifically pure boxers I've ever watched. You know, and I love Manny because he's like the Tasmanian devil. He never stops, you know. Yeah. And it was nice to see the heavyweight title change hands for the first time in a decade.
We touched on this, and I wanted to ask you, Pete, about the hybrid of the Martial Arts Hall of Fame and the Boxing Hall of Fame. That does make sense in line with what we're talking about.
And it was almost accidental in our case. We had soon to be our 12th year of the Illinois Martial Arts Hall of Fame, and as I mentioned, we began to induct boxers, and that's how we found out that there was an Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame and were asked to start one. But
it makes sense, though.
We absolutely felt that boxers belonged in there. It's a martial sport. It's a combat sport. I mean, martial arts, and Rita can certainly speak to this as well as I can. I mean, there's, you know, if you're doing one type and not another, you know, people get, well, you know, it's no, you're not doing it right if you're doing this and not the other. But I can honestly say that once we began to induct boxers into the Martial Arts Hall of Fame, there were no complaints from anybody because it's similar but not the same training, you know, and with a similar goal as well.
All right, we're going to take a break for some spots, and we'll be back with more of our Boxing Day special after this. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on our boxing special tonight. I'm playing that song. I want to ask Tony Fitzpatrick if you drew any acting skills. I've seen you in the stage. I saw you in Chirac. We can talk about that setup of Old Girl here in a minute. But, I mean, I think about when I saw you at Steppenwolf. And was there any relation of being in the center of the stage at Steppenwolf and being in the center of a boxing ring? Elaborate on that.
Very much.
Like, what are the disciplines?
Because you figure you got about 15 seconds to get them on your side. You walk out, you start talking. And especially the shows that we do where we talk directly to the audience. Very much. And perhaps more nervous before walking out on the stage at Steppenwolf than ever. You know, I was a little naive fighting. I didn't, you know, I was too stupid to be very afraid, you know. I soon learned to be, you know. But, yeah, I mean, there's this kind of, you know, you versus them thing, you know.
Yeah.
And particularly the last show, the Midnight City, where we had to get a great deal of information out in 90 minutes and make it funny, entertaining, and visual and musical at the same time. They're not unlike experiences in an odd way.
I saw Chirac this week.
Yeah.
And I like that old girl segment.
Oh,
where
yeah.
You talk about Eugene Records. Did you ad-lib that line?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, Spike said, you only have a line here. You just get in there, you know? Eugene Record, 1968, you know?
Oh, girl. How'd you wind up in that film, and how'd you get cast as the police chief?
I was almost the mayor.
Yeah, right.
That close.
That would have been something.
But they had an offer out to D.B. Sweeney, and he took it, and he was wonderful in it. And John Cusack was showing Spike my columns about Emmanuel. I write a column for New City, which is the city's kind of the last gasp of the alternative press, and Spike was laughing and reading the columns, and he said to John, I said, damn shame this guy's not an actor. And John goes, well, as it happens he is.
Yeah.
And an hour later I was in front of Spike, and I read for two parts, the mayor and the chief of police, and he made me chief of police.
Shot fast. Was it shot in 40 days?
It was shot in less than 40 days. We started principal photography on June 1st, and he was done by July 9th, and nobody worked any weekends.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
And watching Spike direct a giant set piece, and some of the scenes that we were in, like particularly the O-Girl scene, there were 500 people on that set.
Yeah.
And watching him go from milieu to milieu, from there would be 20 people talking in different parts of that scene. It was like watching, you know, Ricardo Muti conduct. I mean, it was really incredible. And you can tell he'd done this before. He's done big set pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Do the Right Thing, in School Days, in Malcolm X. He was great to work with. You know, he was really wonderful. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun.
What do you think? I know you have opinions about the response the film's gotten.
I think
good and bad.
I think the film is a masterpiece of agitprop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it absolutely begged a dialogue that now demands a reckoning. I mean, it also had the oddly and sadly fortuitous timing of coming out at the same time as the Laquan McDonald video, that those two things dovetailed. And it underlined the fact that our city is not being policed equitably. I mean, the first thing Emmanuel did is throw Gary McCarthy under the bus, and I don't think that was really the cure. I mean, I think McCarthy inherited a police culture that was deeply rotten for a long, long time. You know, now that everybody's got camera, this is the stuff we're seeing. Imagine the stuff we haven't seen.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not to demonize police officers. I believe most of them absolutely are the best of the best. You know, but you get a few cowboys and the blue line. What we're seeing now demands action.
Rita, where did you grow up?
In north side of the city.
North side of the city?
I still live on the same block I was born on.
Yeah?
Yep.
And how has that changed for you? I asked you this question kind of in context of what we're talking about, but also you talked about the one fighter who's fighting for his life.
Absolutely. I mean,
sounds cliche, but how have the streets changed since you started fighting?
You know, I mean, I'm always driving across the city to go to the gym anyway, so, you know, unfortunately you see the differences when you go from one side of the city to the other. I spend a lot of my time on the south side of the city at the gym and everything else, so... I'll bring this kind of a full circle here. My nephew just started working for the Chicago Blackhawks, doing camps, different camps in different areas of the city. And he's just now seeing that not everybody lives like his neighborhood or our neighborhood or wherever. And he said, he's like, holy crap. He said, they don't have anything. And I said, now you know. Now you know. Yeah. You know, when you try to spend time with the fighters in the gym or meeting them there at certain times, even sometimes you don't want to get up and go, and you go because that could be their life. You know, it might be an hour or two of my time or their time or whatever, but that could mean the difference in their life right there.
Yeah.
Wow. So, and I'm really glad that, that my nephew's seeing that now, and I wish everybody would, because I think a lot of opinions would change on a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we shot largely in Englewood in Auburn Gresham. In fact, most of my scenes were at the Armory at 55th and Cottage Grove. And this is the tale of two cities.
And I think one thing that's brought up in the film, manufacturing and businesses going to the South Side, that really needs to be done. You know, why isn't there
Why
isn't there a Nike factory or a Nike, you know?
Why can't Emmanuel go to Nike and say, look, your most ardent consumers are from this neighborhood.
Right.
So instead of making people tenants in their own countries in China, why don't you build a factory here?
Yeah.
And if you don't, we won't allow your stuff to be sold here.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to take a break from the news, and we're going to continue our Boxing Day special. We're going to bring Rick Addy. Can you guys hang around a little bit?
Sure.
Get some more microphones in here. So.
Yeah.
Don't go away on WGN.
Now this is Sunshine Showdown, the man called Smokey Joe Fraser and Fire Foma. Cause the man called Foma stands to dominate. Cause East, West, North, and South, he punched them all about. Go with a right and a left. Go with a left and a right.
Welcome back to our Boxing Day edition of Nocturnal Journal here on 720 WGN. You know, Dan Lon, Boxing Day is when bosses give their employees gifts in boxes.
Really?
Yeah.
I missed mine.
Producer Shane just came in here and asked me, he's like, you guys know what Boxing Day really is, right? You guys don't actually think it's about boxing. I said, no.
But we're flying with it. So we've got a great panel here. We got Pete Hoffman, co-director of the Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame. We got my boxing writer friends, Bob Mutter, Jeff Johnson. We've got my friend Tony Fitzpatrick. And inductee 2015 initial class to the Boxing Hall of Fame, Rita Figueroa. Bob, during the news, you were telling me about a story you were working on. We were talking about the city and the landscape of the city.
It was around 1989, 1990, and a team of French amateurs from the Paris area came over to work in Chicago. It's a long story about how they came here. But they had some exhibitions, and they were training down at the Boys and Girls Club, which had a nice boxing gym on 63rd Street in Woodlawn. And I went down to interview them, expecting to do a sports story. And I ended up having to take it back to the sports editor and said, we can't use this. There's nothing sports about this. They ended up putting it on the front page of the paper. I could not get those guys to talk about boxing. Once they saw Woodlawn, they couldn't believe it.
You know what? When the kids from Ulster came here, from Ireland, it was much the same case.
Yeah, they said it was
they were horrified by what they saw.
They said there's nothing like this in Paris.
Yeah.
Isn't that something? How many of your fighters, what neighborhoods do they all come from, Rita?
They're all over the city, suburbs. They're from all over the place.
They're all over?
So, yeah.
How many people do you train? What's the number, roughly?
You know, I don't even know. Whoever's in the gym, really. We have a bunch of amateurs, a bunch of pros. But, you know, we get them from Englewood, and then we get them from Barrington.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's one wonderful thing about boxing is when you walk into the gym, it doesn't matter where you're from, doesn't matter what you do. You got cops, you got, you know, gangbangers. So they're from everywhere.
This is for everybody. What are the aspirations of someone getting into the sport? Rita, what was your aspiration? I mean, people talk about, you know, basketball, football, ways out and stuff. What do people want to gain out of boxing?
You know, If you're going to be a boxer, I think your ultimate goal should be to be a champion.
Yeah.
That's to be a champion, and because with being a champion comes all the rewards with it, financial, whatever it is, you know. So if you don't want to go out there and be the best, then at anything you do, then what's the point?
Same question to you guys.
Well, again, and I came up through a martial arts background, and in my case, it was initially wanting to learn how to take care of myself, situational self-defense stuff, and then ultimately in competition wanting to test myself, and found out I like taking tests. And it's one of those things. You start figuring how to do it, how to get better at it, and it's a very compelling, it becomes a very big thing in your life very quickly.
What about personalities? So we're playing tracks here, of course, Ali and Joe Frazier and stuff. Does boxing have the personalities that it used to have?
I think so. I think boxers are unique individuals, each one of them. It's amazing. There's more personality in a boxer than in any other sport, I think. And they're great interviews. I can say that.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
I think there's a language barrier now that you didn't have when so many of the champions were American. I saw a stat the other day that said that there were more world champions currently from the United Kingdom than there are from the United States. And I couldn't believe that, but boxing has really become a pure international sport right now, and maybe the communication skills are not what they were back in the days when we were listening to the Ollies and the Frasers.
At the very beginning of the show, we also talked about, television being like a big avenue for boxing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It still is in a certain way, but people don't watch on network TV on Friday night like they did in the 50s and 40s.
No, they attempted that, though, to bring back Friday night fights.
On ESPN.
ESPN.
And Premier Boxing on Spike. CBS, so there is free boxing on network TV.
It's actually more now than there has been.
Yeah,
But HBO and Showtime both have really good boxing programming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what you notice now is also lots of fighters from the Philippines, Latin America, Spanish-speaking fighters, I think, are pretty much, they kind of rule the middleweights,
And the lighter weights, Well, and they've always been there. As you guys have said, it's an international sport now in a way that it wasn't when I was a kid.
Well, just look at our men's Olympic team. This is the last Olympics we didn't bring one medal home.
Yep.
Yeah.
We had a female win a gold medal, but not one male. Boxing, gold, bronze, silver, anything.
I keep pulling for Cotto. I keep wanting Cotto to become the fighter that, I love the guy, and he always disappoints me.
Now, why do you like him?
I think just because he fulfills that narrative of that, working class kid, hardworking. And I think he has the same problem Tommy Hearns has. I think he works his ass off in the gym, and then I think he forgets his fight on the way to the ring. There are guys who are brilliant gym fighters.
Oh, yeah.
Tommy Hearns was one of them. He was phenomenal at Kronk Gymnasium. And then he went to fight Sugar Ray Leonard, and he boxed him for 13 rounds and then tried to fight him.
Mm-hmm. What happens, Rita?
Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Great boxing quote.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you never know. You get out there sometimes and the game plan goes out the window and you can train a fighter for 8 weeks to slip a jab and slip a jab and slip a jab, but when they get with that jab,
once they break
they're
your
like,
nose,
forget
man.
It. Forget it. Game on. Yeah. And they just, you go back to your original instinct to do whatever it is and go,
That's what it is, yeah. I want to go around the table and have everybody just say what's coming up. So tell me a little bit more where people can find out more about the Hall of Fame.
On Facebook, Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame, also Illinois Martial Arts Hall of Fame. Next Martial Arts Banquet is the 2016 induction class is, I hope I got this right, Saturday, March 26th. And then the 2016 second annual Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame will be in November, in November 2016.
And so that's how people can, follow up with you.
Like us on Facebook, both pages, and you'll be hearing about it.
And Rita, we were talking, you got some fights coming up next year. You don't know the specifics.
Yeah, not specific dates. I know there's some in later in January, hopefully some in February as well. A couple of weeks we got a fight out in Dallas. We're going out to Dallas for a fight. So there's fights out there, and
How does a guy like me, I just once in a while I like to go to a fight, how do I find out about it? Is a place to, I would get cards in my neighborhood over in Ukraine, there'd be stuff about that. That's how I found out.
On Facebook, you go to Hits Productions or, it's Warriors. Boxing. Warriors now is not Akon anymore, but Warriors does some shows, not as many here, but Box Rec. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of stuff out there as far as publicity.
But you said Hammond is the place.
That's where Bobby does all his shows out in Hammond. And, guys like Hollywood Antonio, the guys that are fighting now, Sammy Horowitz and those guys. So it's always a good show going out there, too. So keep your eyes open and ears open and get out to the fight. Support these kids.
We also try to put all the upcoming cards on the Hall of Fame page as well.
So we should check that. Yeah. Bookmark that.
Yeah.
Well, the gloves are coming up, too. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Not too long.
Yep. Registration's Valentine's Day weekend is registration. They
now,
start at the beginning.
Where are they now? They used to be at St. Andrews.
They're at Cicero Stadium.
Cicero.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cicero Stadium. And Bob and Jeff, what's the status of the media in the boxing world right now?
not too good.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the Chicago papers pretty much ignore the sport locally. Yeah. And even when you have a big fight on pay-per-view or an HBO or Showtime-type fight, it's very hard to get the results the next day. The papers don't even run it.
I remember constantly looking for information about Jakubowski when he was fighting, you know, mm-hmm. because he was kind of a big deal and really exciting mm-hmm. to watch. And it was really hard finding any kind of coverage.
But there are a lot of really nice boxing websites.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they have the schedules, kind of, too.
Yep.
That's kind of taken.
And if you Google like them on Facebook, they put updates all mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can find all that stuff out on Facebook. So thank you. Thank you all for coming on this part of the panel.
Thanks for having us, Tony. Thank you. It's
Boxing Day.
It's been quite,
Boxing Day, old chap.
We're going to bring Rick on in a minute. I want Rita to hang around for Rick because they got some stories. But it's been quite a year for you, Tony. I remember from January to now.
Yeah, I started out the year with a quadruple bypass.
Holy cow.
Yikes.
Mitral valve repair and lost 85 pounds. And it's really weird. I've got still some of my old clothes and I've like gone down 4 sizes. It's like I'm wearing my dad's clothes when I was little.
So you went from that to the Chirac thing.
Chirac, and then my TV show got picked up.
So tell us about that before we break.
We did a pilot called Patriot. It's shot in Montreal, and it's about just the idiocy of the Patriot Act and the lunacy of surveilling everyday Americans and surveilling other countries. But it's like a dark comedy political thriller. And we got picked up for series, so I go back to work after the first of the year.
And when does that start?
I think I start shooting in like late January or February. But I play a disgraced former policeman named Jack Birdbath, who
another cop role for you,
who draws pictures of birds and does dark deeds for this. CIA cover guy. This guy has got a non-official cover job.
I love your vibe in Chirac as a Chicago police chief. Yeah. Kind of a wide-eyed guy, just taking it all in. And
what I tried to imagine was he kind of has no idea what he's looking at.
Yeah, right. That's what I mean.
You know, these women take over an armory without firing a shot. In fact, without even bringing weapons.
Yeah.
And he's got to explain it to his boss. His boss is like, "All right, how many dead? None. How many wounded? Zip. They must have had some pretty heavy firepower. No, sir, they appear to be unarmed."
Yeah.
He goes, "You mean to tell me 75 black and brown women, sir, overtook the armory without firing a shot?" Yeah.
Yeah.
And, hey, kudos to the Hall of Fame for their initial class inducting a woman, and it's such a worthy woman.
I didn't even study the list that much.
Good for you.
That was a layup, guys.
Thank you,
that was easy.
Are you? How many women are? I didn't even study it that much. How many women were in the inducting?
Just Rita.
Isn't that something?
The Martial Arts Hall of Fame, obviously, many, many more, but still not enough.
So, well, thank you, guys. We're going to take a break here for some spots, and we'll be back with Rick Eddy. We're going to talk a little bit more boxing, a little bit boxing music. So don't go away on WGN.
Heavyweight champion of the world in this musical corner, wearing his musical crown, is the man called Joe Frazier.
Yeah!
Sharp as a razor, the man called Joe Frazier.
Welcome back to our Boxing Day edition of Nocturnal Journal. We're joined by the esteemed Rick Eddy from Shake, Rattle, and Reed.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
Very good tonight.
I haven't seen you in a while. Thanks for coming in.
It's good to be here.
And you're here for our boxing thing. I remember I used to see you DJ at least... Well, Cicero and the Pavilion?
Yes.
What was it like to be a boxing DJ?
It was fun. It started at the Park West and grew from there. I worked for Dominic Pasoli, who had 8 Count Productions. I worked with Rita Figueroa many times.
You were Did you work at the Aragon?
And I DJed the Aragon. Oh, yes, the Aragon. I DJed everywhere. Congress Theater. out at the casinos when we used to do them out at the Grand Victoria casinos. So I DJed boxing for 12 years. I actually was a punk rock DJ in the late 70s. And from there, I worked my way up and was doing some private events at Park West. And the girl that runs the Park West, Teresa, recommended me to Dominic, and that was the hookup.
Yeah, now, how does that work? I mean, how did you pick the music, the walkout song? I mean, yeah, tell me what...
Well, Dominic wasn't happy with the DJs he had. I think they were playing, they were heavy on hip-hop and playing for themselves. And my philosophy has always been not so much about hot mixing or anything like that, but it was always about the song. Playing a song that people recognize within the first 10 seconds of that song. So for Rita, I would play AC/DC Thunderstruck. And it starts out, fight, 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 fight.
Just like at a White Sox game.
Yeah.
I hate that.
different fighters had different music that they walked out to the ring at. And every fighter was very important to them that I played their song. The Mexican fighters, they loved the ranchero music.
I remember that at Cicero.
And ranchero music was a country and western Mexican music before the Mexican Revolution. So I would play Vicente Fernandez, Mexico Lindo, or a one called El Rey that was means I'm the king.
Do you remember Barry McQuiggan, the Irish fighter? Because he would always walk out to Thin Lizzy's Fight, you know, Philip Lynott's song, Fight, you know.
Yeah.
And whenever he fought in Ireland, you know, because the guy from Thin Lizzy had passed away and he was fighting, you know, it was cool.
Rita, obvious question, but how'd you pick your song and what did it do for you?
You know what, I was a huge Arturo Gatti fan, huge. And that was the song he always came out to. So, I mean, a lot of times I would actually wear blue and white trunks just because I was a huge Gotti fan. And that song just, and plus, you know, it gets you going. If AC/DC doesn't get you going when you're getting into the ring, something's wrong with you.
Yeah.
So, and it's just, you know, that's always worked for me.
The Gotti Ward fights.
I would always watch those fights.
The greatest fights I've ever watched.
When you're laying around at home nervous about the fight, I would put in the Ward Gotti fights. And that would get me going. To get over there, you know, and fight.
The only shame about those fights, all of them, were that one of those guys had to lose.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it was just phenomenal. Yeah. And I think there was never a title on the line for any of these fights.
They were all 3 10-round fights.
Yeah. And just phenomenal. I mean, it was absolutely on the par of, like, Graziano Zale. That's how good.
Is there music in the gym when you train, or...?
Yeah.
Just who picks it? What do you hear?
It depends who gets there first. If I get there first, I put on either the loop or depends if they're talking or not. Or I'll put on the drive or I'll put on some old rock just because that's what I like.
Uh-huh.
You know, it depends who else comes in. There might be the hip hop that comes on and stuff like that.
But. Yeah. You're the trainer. You get to pick if you want.
It really adds a whole another level of theater to the boxing matches. Yeah. If you go to the boxing matches and they do not have any music, it's just dead air.
Yeah.
And you, when you mentioned the Mexican thing, I do remember that now. The entrance was always so grandiose. And,
Yeah.
What was the one that Chavez, big. What was the one that Julio Cesar Chavez?
I don't know.
It was a big kind of...
song.
Yeah. I can hear it in my head. I just can't
A lot of fighters, many, many fighters, used Eminem's Lose Yourself from... The movie
8 Mile.
Eight Mile.
Yeah. And it says, look, if you had one shot, one opportunity to seize everything you wanted in one moment, would you capture it or let it slip? And it was this big, you know, and many, many fighters love that.
Okay, we're going to take a break for the news. Rick, you're going to hang around. You're going to play a song after this, right?
Yes, we will.
Will this be a Pogo Ponies era?
This is a song from the Pogo Ponies written by Richard Taylor. Yep.
Okay, so you don't want to miss that here WGN Nocturnal Journal.
It's taken so much time, so many bottles of wine, just to try and forgive her. And the endless toast with all those barroom ghosts takes a toll on my liver. Now I'm trying to forget. I tell you, man, it's such a shame. But I can still dream. Has anyone seen my what's-her-name? All the love we shared, the glow of her hair, Christ, don't remind me. Someone plays a song, it won't be long until the heartaches find me. Time after time, it's the same old line, some things never change. But I could still dream, has anyone seen my what's-her-name? Will I remember the look on her face on the day that she broke my heart? But at least I forgot her name. Hey, brother, that's a start. All right, Matlock. Will I remember the look on her face on the day that she broke my heart? But at least I forgot her name. Hey, brother, that's a start. Well, I can't remember the last bender when I felt at ease. And I can't recall a time when all those memories ceased. But you can't deny that I'm making progress just the same. Oh, but I could still dream. Has anyone seen my what's-her-name? But I could still dream. Has anyone seen my what's-her-name? But I could still dream. Has anyone seen my what's-her-name?
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. Rick Addy and Matlock on guitar there. That's an old Pogo Pony song, right? Yeah. Tell us about that song.
Well, Richard wrote it. It's about a fellow that gets his heart broken, and weeks go by, and it was the love of his life, and months go by, and finally he wakes up one day, and he's forgotten that girl's name.
Now, Tony,
it's a joyous moment.
I love seeing how, as an artist, though, you were so absorbed into that song. It possessed you, Rick.
Thank you. Yeah, we love Richard Taylor's songs.
It was really so. Now, you had to read it. We're going to continue with our boxing thing. You had to read a story. You were DJing when Rita was in a fight.
I was at the UIC Pavilion. There was many people on the bill, and Rita was one of them. And when her fight came up, she got hit. I DJ'd her entry
music.
Pardon
me?
It was a headbutt?
It was a headbutt, huh?
It was not a punch. It was a headbutt.
Yeah, now that you reminded me, I do remember that. Yeah, it was a headbutt. And they stopped the fight, and there was this long delay, and we were all very, very worried. It turns out that it took some time for an ambulance to come, right?
Yeah, that was a whole other story. Another fight was going on in the ring at the time, so
yes.
They didn't want to stop that fight to get the ambulance in the back, get the doctor in the back, and that was a whole issue with the.
I remember this really intense delay.
Yeah. Long story short is, my husband pretty much told the commission person that stood in front of the ambulance that if he didn't move, he wouldn't have a life.
Yes.
So
he wouldn't have a life. That's pretty specific.
And I know Michael. Your husband, Michael.
My husband's got a small guy, and he can be very intimidating.
Yes.
Although he's really his appearance.
Oh, Michael's.
He certainly would have done whatever needed to be done to get that ambulance out of there.
How bad were you hurt?
Had I not gotten to the hospital when I did, I would not be sitting here with you.
Wow.
Yes, they did the most amazing thing. They rushed her to the hospital. Word got back to us even before the end of the boxing matches that you had been put into a hospital room. They assembled a team, and they did emergency brain surgery. Yep.
Did they really?
And we were all praying for you so hard.
And it worked. I appreciate it. So, yeah, it's kind of a funny story, and I tell fighters this all the time. I said, surround yourself with people that know you and that you trust with your life, because mine counted that night.
And it was just a headbutt. Just a...
It was a headbutt, and you know what? It's just one of those things that, you know, that's how boxing is. That's boxing. We, as fighters, we know that going in, that you never know, something could happen. But it was very imperative that I got to the hospital as quickly as it did. And it was, the way it worked out was, my corner people are also martial arts people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people that they called was Tamir Hrzanski, who happens to be the head neurosurgeon at St. Joseph's. Well, he called Dr. Hanjani, who was his protege at the time, at UIC. We got there, and she was waiting for us. I was in surgery. I think as long as it took them to shave my head, we were in. So it was like,
wow. That's
like
amazing.
That. And I was very blessed that it happened. Otherwise, it would not have fared so well for me.
At what point of your career did that happen? In other words,
it was my last fight.
It was your last fight.
My last fight.
Okay. Yep. That was it.
Yep.
That was it. That was the injury we were talking about earlier. That was injury.
You did come back to visit us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
I remember you coming back after.
Visit you where?
At the fights.
At the fights.
And she would hang out in the DJ booth.
You would, really?
Yeah. I'm just, you know what? I still go to the fights. It was probably the. And people think I'm weird when I say this. I said it's probably the best and worst thing that's happened to me. Yeah. The worst, obviously, I almost lost my life. The best, because I'm much more of a compassionate person now for people. And not that I wasn't not that I was not before, but
no.
When you get that close to not having anything, you appreciate things a whole lot more. So, I mean, that's just a bit lucky.
That's quite a story.
Yeah.
I just visited with the doctors that saved my life from the quadruple bypass. I gave a bunch of artwork to the hospital, and it's humbling being with medical professionals.
My the woman that did my brain surgery, she came to the Hall of Fame. I invited her to the Hall of Fame.
Oh,
dinner.
Did she really?
Yeah, and she came, and it was great. And she brought her assistant that did the surgery that night, and it was very nice to talk to her and stuff like that. Yeah. You know, it was just, you know, I wouldn't be here if had she not done what she does. So,
whatever. I mean, this is one of the reasons I get so infuriated when I hear Donald Trump and his idiotic, bigoted xenophobia. You know, a devout Muslim rebuilt my heart
and saved my life.
Yeah,
and saved your life.
And two immigrants from Colombia were my cardiologist, and another immigrant from the Philippines. Yeah. So whenever he starts that crap about immigrants, you know, he should not forget that we're a country comprised of them, and that 150 years ago, I'm sure that Sitting Bull and Red Cloud would have liked to tighten up the borders for white Europeans. I'm very grateful to the devout Muslim who saved my life and rebuilt my heart.
Yeah. And Daisy Fuenides married Richard Marx. That's a good really? Thing. Yeah, well, good thing for
those are good
for immigrants
good
too. I got Richard Marx off our hand.
Yeah,
I'm sorry for that segue. So tell me about Shake Rattle. Everybody's talking about
Daisy Fuentes lose a bet or something. No. What?
So you're right. You're absolutely right, Tony. Shake Rattle Reed. Everybody's talking about it. What's the game plan? You're closing it down. I mean, I did a story on you guys years ago.
In 2001, you did a big story. Was it the Sun-Times?
It had to be the Sun-Times, but you opened in 66. You took it over in 86. Tell us the storyline.
Well, I've been selling records in Chicago since I moved here in 1971. And I moved in with my sister and her husband in Uptown, Chicago.
It was quite different then.
Dover and Sunnyside, yes. So my sister and her husband had what was called the Book Box. And it started in 1966. And in 1986, they had enough of Uptown. They wanted to retire and move to Virginia. I come from a record background of selling vinyl. So when I took over the Book Box, I figured, well, change the name, let people know there's a new sheriff in town. put up a sign called Shake, Rattle, and Read, and took out all the books out of the middle of the store and added used records. And that was, I got the key on January 1st of 86. 3 months later, Dave Gemmelow gets the key to the Green Mill. Together, we totally cleaned up that strip.
You did.
And rebuilt that part of Uptown.
You've been such an, and I've mentioned you on the show before, you've been such an ambassador for that neighborhood.
Yeah, I was a director on the Uptown Chamber of Commerce for about 7 years. We brought in the Uptown Rib Festival. We brought in Argyle Saturday Nights. Did what we can to make that area grow.
And so, you're gonna miss it, right?
I'll miss being there, but 45 years is enough.
Yeah.
It's time to do something different. You know, life, like you know, life is so short.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. We almost lost you, Tony.
Yeah. No kidding. You too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I've had my problems. And so I didn't have the idea of closing the shop. I just simply wanted to retire.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. Turnkey operation, just like I got it in 86 from my sister.
Yeah.
Well, I'll do the same to some 30-year-olds.
Right.
Sell the shop at a cheap price and move on, and I'm just going to continue to be an online seller. I've been an eBay power seller for 16 years.
You're going to continue that?
Hmm?
Are you going to continue that?
I am going to continue that. I have to, because I've worked in record stores all my life, and my Social Security is very low. It's $800 a month, so I'm going to have to do something for the rest of my life, which will be selling stuff online. I've had an Amazon store for 10 years. The eBay business is solid. I'm just going to go somewhere else and do it somewhere else.
What about street traffic? It's not what it used to be, is it? Do you get as many people coming
No,
in?
I'm getting hammered because they're doing this wonderful thing. Uptown's going to change, but not for another 5 to 7 years, I don't believe. And then it's going to be maybe the real entertainment district that everyone envisions. They're doing a $240 million rehab of the Wilson L stop, the second most money they've ever spent on an L stop. When that's done in 2017, they're going to come down to Lawrence Avenue, which is close to me in the Aragon, in the Riv, Riviera Theater, and they're going to close Lawrence for 3 years while they put in escalators, elevators, expand the tracks. I don't have another 5 to 7 years to give it to wait for this change to happen. I've heard that when I bought the store in 86 that the Uptown Theater was going to reopen.
I was going to ask you, do you think
30 really? Years later, it has not opened.
It's a pretty – I was at the last show there. It was Jay Giles. There was no heat.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the water, or some liquid on the floor.
I saw Peter Gabriel there. Yeah. I saw Bruce Springsteen there.
Yeah.
The last show I went to was in 81. It was Prince opening for Rick James.
Do you really think it'll reopen?
I think
it's
Jerry
pretty
will
bad
get
shape,
it reopened.
You think so? You think so?
Jam owns it. It's such a tough business now, but hopefully it'll happen, but I don't think it's going to happen in the next 5 to 7 years. I don't see it.
You have a party in mid-January?
Yes, we're going to have our 50th anniversary party from 1966 to 2016. We're going to do it mid-January, January the Friday the 15th, Saturday the 16th. I think on Saturday, me and Matt and Richard Taylor and a couple of Pogo Ponies are going to do an acoustic set. We're going to bring in James Porter to do something.
Oh, James is a great guy, yeah.
And we're going to bring in John Battles to close out the night with this crazy psychobilly music.
Okay. We're going to take
we're going to have a sale, basically, for 4 days where everything's 50% off, and new vinyl will be like 25% off, which is a great deal.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. You're going to do one more song for us before
we
split?
Yeah, we'd love to.
Okay, so don't go away on Nocturnal Journal.
As I lay me down to sleep, I'm a honky-talking mess. I know I got a date to keep, I just don't know the address. I know we're kindred spirits, I can hear it in every chord. I'm gonna meet St. Hank on the road to my great reward. I hitchhike his lost highway since the day I hit 13.
what he means. I know that Luke the Drifter is miles ahead in a beat-up Ford. I'm gonna meet St. Hank on the road to my great reward. And when my prayers are answered, I'll be walking by his side unto our destination, the great tavern in the sky. I know I'm just a mortal man. Please forgive me, Lord. I'm gonna meet St. Hank on the road to my great reward. I'm gonna meet St. Hank on the road to my great reward.
Wow, the shoppers are stopping in the street to see what's going on. Yeah. Rick Addy,
and
Matlock. What song is that?
It's called St. Hank.
Okay.
It's for our hero, Hank Williams.
Now, did you play that? Now, we were talking off the Ramones came into your store?
Yeah. Johnny and Joey were good friends. They stopped in 3 or 4 times to the store. I have in my apartment signed autographs from a lot of the bands that have been in the store. Florence recently from Florence and the Machine, maybe 2-3 years ago, came in when she was playing the Aragon on one of her first tours. She came in and spent like $300 with her band and put me on the guest list for the show. And in the middle of her concert, in between song banter, said, "Oh, I was just at this quaint little bookstore." And I ran into her again a year later in New Orleans, and she sang Oh, Darlin' by the Beatles with Little Band of Gold.
Oh, I love Little Band of Gold.
And I went backstage and said hi to her.
Wow.
Mick Jones from The Clash, Iggy Pop, Arctic Monkeys from so many bands that played the Riviera or the Aragon or the Green Mill have
Steve
come
Earle
in the store.
Used to wander into there once in a while.
Yes. Steve Earle's favorite taco store was right around the corner.
That's right. Taqueria.
Yeah, the Carmella's Taqueria. Yeah.
We got a couple minutes. Matlock, there's a show tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Don't forget to plug the show.
Stick Flight, it's a punk rock band. We're opening for the Winkle Brothers tomorrow night at Shuba's. They're playing tonight also with Devil in a Woodpile. We're playing the second night with them tomorrow night. We go on at 9 o'clock. Should be a good time.
Cool. Well, thank you guys for, I'm going to wrap it up here in a minute, but thank you for coming in on our Boxing Day extravaganza.
Yes.
Any good boxing books there at your store? I mean, do you know the inventory?
The great Mark Cram, Great Men Die Twice. His son, Mark Cram Jr., reissued a collection of his boxing essays. Also, the greatest novel ever written about boxing, Fat City by Leonard Gardner.
Wow.
Tell us about that.
Which is the one that John Shulian always references. John Shulian, of course, was a great Chicago Sun-Times boxing writer for years. For my money, the best living boxing writer.
When I worked at Downtown Records in the 70s on Rush Street at Rush and Walton, and we had the jazz showcase in our basement, one of the number one albums at the time was George Benson's soundtrack to Muhammad Ali's movie, The Greatest. And Muhammad Ali came in on Christmas Day.
Oh, wow.
And Christmas Eve, actually, and signed the album cover to me, and I have it hanging up in my apartment.
Wow. That's cool. That's a very cool
story. Cool.
Rita, what about your favorite boxing books? Boxing literature? Boxing?
Oh, I don't know. You pick them up. There's a couple of books about amateurs. You know, there's amateur Golden Glove Chicago books out there, too, that I like to read. And I actually like watching old tape. I get some old tapes from people to watch some of the old fights.
The old ESPN ones. They've been replaying the Ali Frazier.
And they play them, and they're great.
They're
great watching some of the old fighters, black and white tapes going, oh, that's pretty cool.
Do you use some of that stuff with your fighters today?
You
pick up stuff?
You try to, but you can see where it's different when you're watching it, being a boxer or a trainer or whatever. You're like, oh, they were doing that. Get their old training ideas,
Pete was saying earlier that, in regards to that ESPN Ali Frazier series, that they were quoted as saying, Joe Frazier said, we entered the ring champions and we left old men.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you all
Happy Boxing
down.
Day.
Thank you, Rick. Yep. Thanks, Tony. It's good to see you again. Thanks,
thank you
Rita.
Very much. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Bruce.
Rita, great seeing you again.
You too, absolutely. Bruce.
Thanks, Dan Long, for all your help. You guys have a great new year. We'll be back next Saturday night.